welcome to the Natsubasho podcast. Tachi-ai people here on the video. We've got the site founder, Andy. Say hello.
Hey, everybody.
And it appears that he's joining us from the top of the Tokyo Skytree, a feat I'm not entirely sure how he brought about. No, really, folks, it's a synthetic background, but it looks great. Josh, our man in foreign lands, once again, with a fabulous backdrop himself. Can you say hello, sir?
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. Josh, unfortunately, is not in Japan, although I'm sure he wishes he was. And I'm Bruce, associate editor, joining you today as we go into some of the fascinating stuff that has happened even within the last 2 weeks since we recorded our previous batch of podcast material, and we're back. And we will, of course, be getting to our regrettable predictions, but that will be in our second show and our second segment. But let's dive into some fun things around the Banzuke, which came out last weekend. And one of the great things about it is that we've got a four Ozeki Banzuke, which has not happened in a couple of years. I think the last time was probably July of 2019. And it wasn't really a four Ozeki. I mean, okay, it was a four Ozeki Banzuke, but it wasn't a four Ozeki Basho, because you had Takekesho, who was out the whole tournament. You had Takeyasu, who was fighting like crap and about to go Kataban and lose Ozeki. You had a wheezy puffy Goedo. And you had Tochinoshin, who kind of was getting on the bad side of that knee. So if you really want to look at some rock'em sock'em four Ozeki action, you have to go back to the famous freaking Hatsu 2017 Basho, where Kisuna Sato finally took the Yusho and was promoted to Yokozuna. We had Koto Shogiku. Oh, that's the tournament he got demoted. Most people don't recall that Koto Shogiku lost Ozeki at that point because everyone's like focused on Kisuna Sato. But you had Terano Fuji, who was Kataban and about ready to fall out of Ozekihood himself. And you had Goedo, of course, being Goedo and squeaking by at 8-7. And it was down to the last moment on whether or not he was going to be Kataban again. So we head into now a four Ozeki tournament. We hope they're all going to show up. And everyone, for the most part, seems relatively healthy. And the only person who's really in any kind of danger is, of course, that's right, say it together with me, Shodai. Shodai, that's right, Bruce's favorite Rikishi. It's Shodai. And this is, of course, the second time he's been Kataban. And I think he's only been Ozeki for, what, three tournaments? Or two or four?
Yeah, like three.
Yes. Somehow Shodai could manage to be Kataban twice, having been Ozeki for one tournament. No, not really. I'm sorry. I'm busting on Shodai because the guy's inconsistent. All right, take me out of this mess, Josh. What do you think about our four Ozeki Banzuke and the prospect for some rock'em sock'em sumo?
Yeah, it's pretty funny because when you mentioned that the last time there were four Ozeki, they had Tochinoshin and Takayasu in the mix, I completely forgot about that. It hasn't felt like we've had a true, really strong collection of Ozeki since, you know, that time that you mentioned before with Koto Shogiku, Kisuna Sato. You know, you want to look at a collection of guys from which hopefully one Yokozuna can eventually emerge. You know, this group will eventually give birth to someone who will be, you know, the next grand champion of the sport. You know, looking at it now, it's tough, but, you know, as I always say when we come on here, there's always this recency bias. Whoever's been the most successful recently, we're like, oh, that guy can go on to be Yokozuna, why not? In this case, I think it's the most likely, however. I think, you know, out of that group, Terano Fuji, even in his diminished physical capacity, still looks like the person with the most all-around talent and ability, and so I'm just hopeful this time for a really strong showing from him.
All right, Andy, two questions for you. First of all, is our great hope for Yokozuna a man with no knees? And two, is the four Ozeki Banzuke a harbinger of doom as it has been in the past?
Oh, I am thinking that we will not see a Yokozuna from this crop. And I think that we may actually end up seeing five Ozeki before this is all.
You're still holding on to Takeyasu getting it back together again.
Yes, and I've got some rather interesting stats about that. Hakuho's first Yusho was from the rank of Ozeki 3 West. Exactly.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
It's exactly 15 years ago. And the other four Ozeki of the time, Tochi Azuma, Kota Oshu, Chiyo Taikai, and Kaio, are all running their own stables right now. And Ama was a Komusubi. Kakuryu was down in Juryo. And Kisano Sato was Maegashira 1. And there were dozens of recruits that tournament, including a guy named Ryuden. And so it's just hitting on all cylinders. And so I've got this feeling
the
that
the stars
we're
are aligning. There's a grand cosmic significance about to take place.
Exactly.
All right. And so you mentioned the boss. I wasn't going to talk about him because we know for a fact that he's out this tournament, but he hit another milestone. So it appears that the first time ever you've got a Yokozuna on the Banzuke by himself, who had also before been the only Yokozuna on the Banzuke by himself, separated by like, what, a dozen years or so? I mean, this guy continues to rack up records, and not even records he necessarily wants.
His longevity is just
staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
The man's an institution. But let's move on down the Banzuke, because although it's really fun to predict whether or not we're going to see death and dismemberment at the Ozeki ranks, because every time we've had four recently, that's what has happened. Let's take a look at where I think the bright stars are, which is down at the top of the rank and file. So the Majishiro 1s right now are some rock'em sock'em robots, and even the 2s. Andy, tell me a little bit about this logjam at the top of the rank and file.
Oh, I mean, you gotta feel for Wakataka Kage, Hokuto Fuji, and Meisei. They had those great tournaments, and then just because nobody wanted to give up their Sanyaku slot, none of them got one, and so you had three guys who pretty well could have deserved one this time around.
Yeah.
Hokuto Fuji, though, he has not had, I guess, consistency at this rank. The last time that he got 2 Kachikoshi in a row, actually, was almost 2 years ago. And it was coincidentally at Maegashira 1. So, I mean, I don't know how much further he will go, because he's pretty one-dimensional. He doesn't have the power, really, that Takakesho has. But, he definitely has skill, and he puts his heart and blood into it. And so I'm eager to see what he can do this tournament.
So, Josh, we've got a couple of vets in Hokuto Fuji and Meisei, and we've got a couple of hard-charging youngsters in Wakataka Kage and Tobizaru. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts about just how tough and competitive are these guys going to be in this 4 Ozeki tournament.
I think it's going to be difficult. I think if you look at Hokuto Fuji and his performance over the years, he came up, he made it up to the Joy Jin, having never had Makikoshi in a tournament before.
Yeah.
And he had a little of, yeah, very impressive. He had some struggles at first, but he's more or less hung around there. And the pattern that's really emerged for him these last couple of years is he really struggles that first week when he gets all the top rankers.
Yep.
Especially Yokozuna, and then the second week, you know, he's able to turn it on when he faces the rank and filers, and it'll be interesting. No Yokozuna, obviously, again in the mix this time out. You know, maybe some people in Sanyaku might be a little vulnerable to someone like him. Wakataka Kage, for me, you know, I think has passed Hokuto Fuji in terms of someone that you might want to hang your hat on in terms of a potential future Ozeki. I like him a little bit more. When Hokuto Fuji came up, I thought he was nailed on to be an Ozeki, and
well,
you know.
He suffered that pretty brutal concussion that really sort of seemed to take a lot of the energy out of his sumo, and he's struggled since then with balance. And I have to wonder if maybe the concussion is partly to blame.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I was there that day. It was not good to watch. I mean, we can talk about injuries, you know, another time. But, you know, it's you can sense it. You can sense the air gets sucked out of the room when something like that happens. And, you know, it was really hard to watch that. It was hard to watch him, you know, get back up and try and rerun the match after that. And then obviously work his way back to fitness. Yeah, exactly. There was a Mata, you know, from Yuden who has a few of those, you know, in his back catalog. But, you know, it feels like this is kind of where his future is going to be. We'll see him up in Sanyaku in the future. Maybe he'll top out at Sekiwake. But Wakataka Kage feels to me like someone who technically is very good. You know, still pretty young, someone who doesn't have a lot of, you know, sort of miles on the engine, considering he came out of college. Yeah. So he hasn't been in professional sumo that long. And, you know, you mentioned Tobizaru. You know, you want to kind of sometimes bracket him in this sort of group with like that Enho, Ishiura, you know, Uras of the world, where, you know, sort of little exciting guy who likes to run around. He's not really that kind of sumo. He's, you know, a slapper, maybe not quite in the Yoshikaze mold. He's a little bit unique, but I don't think he's someone who's, and in the business world, you would say, in the product world, you'd say scalable. I don't think his sumo is scalable to this sort of depth of competition, but it's exciting to see him up there, you know?
It is. Okay, well, so let's go into exciting competition, because, you know, for years now, Team Tachi-Ai has been talking about sumo that most people don't get to see. And that's the third division from the top. It's Makushita. And it is just inches away for these guys to get into the salaried ranks. And some of the sumo is absolutely mind-blowingly competitive. And I think especially so this time. And Josh, you brought this up as something we really should be paying attention to this May. Tell us a little bit more about your thoughts.
Yeah, the top of Makushita is always competitive, as you mentioned. But this time it's a little ridiculous if you look at the Bandai. 9 of the top 12, you know, so down to Makushita 6, have never been Sekitori. And then from the other 3, you have Yuko and Kaisho, who have been up there and are people who we expect to be longer-term Sekitori in the future, both with reasonable ceilings. And then right behind that, you have Abi immediately right behind that. So
yes.
In terms of how things have shaped up, you know, you see Ikioi and Kotoyuki disappearing from the top of the division under different circumstances. Kotoyuki's Intai and Ikioi's AWOL. So it's really opened things up for a handful of new faces to come up to Juryo if the spots are there, which is exciting because this tournament, there are no new faces in Juryo, a few returning people. So, you know, you look at some of these names. Koto Kuzan has been hanging around the top of the division for a long time. Filipino, or maybe he's half Filipino. Tochimaru, we've seen visit Juryo a few times. Rogo, we talked about a lot in the last couple of years. Futogoyama stable guy, you know, the new Futogoyama stable, potentially the first Sekitori. Murata, Hokutenkai, of course, the nephew of Takanoiwa, finally up there. So, you know, some really interesting names, some crazy names. Oh, yeah.
You'd mentioned in the past Kirihirima.
He's been up and down a million times. I mean, he's a veteran. He's a slight guy. I think he's been promoted something like 8 times and come down 8 times. So I think he's pretty close to setting the record, if he hasn't set it already, for most one and dones in Juryo. But he's
almost at the outside range where he might make promotion if there's a bunch of people in Juryo who flame out. But Andy, what do you think though? I mean, it's been really tough on the promotion circuit for Makushita up into Juryo because the Juryo people seem to be hanging on. What are your thoughts about this time around? Are we going to get some fresh faces?
Oh, I mean, undoubtedly this time. And it's going to be a bit of a contrast from last tournament where we had, like Josh said, the Ikioi and Kotoyuki Kyujos. And then we also had a couple of COVID Kyujos as well up there. And now everybody's going to be back, plus Abi, as Josh said. And they're all going to be gunning for that Sekitori status. And Abi's probably going to be everybody's favorite. But, I mean, last time around, he faced six guys below Makushita 30, including one guy from Sandanme. Yep. So he's going to be, I guess, really in the junior meat grinder. If the Makuuchi Joy is the meat grinder, the junior meat grinder down there for trying to get there. So Abi's going to be facing quite a few challenging Sekitori hopefuls.
So I'm sort of looking at Roga and Tochimaru as my favorites to make a play for it. But talk about people on the verge of heartbreak. I don't know if this matters to the man or not, but it is kind of a slight to probably the greatest Yokozuna ever. A different grumpy old man committee, one that doesn't open its mouth nearly as much, but the grumpy old man committee focused on sumo traditions, said that they probably should not give Hakuho his Yokozuna name as his kabu. Was that a giant middle finger to the greatest ever, Josh?
Yes. I think it's frustrating. There's no way to read it, you know, other than vindictive, if the idea is that you're pulling this stunt, you know, right before the retirement of the most successful rikishi sports ever known. And for those people who don't know, you know, the greatest Yokozuna are bestowed this honor, essentially, the Ichidai Toshiori, the one-time use of your rikishi name, you know, your shikona, as your elder name. And so, you know, Taiho had it and he opened Taiho Beya, and now even Otake Stable is known as the Taiho Dojo, just as Tokitsukaze Beya is known as the Futagoyama Dojo. Kita Noumi had that. Chiyono Fuji was offered it and declined in order to become. Yep, and then of course Takanohana accepted it. And so it's interesting because, you know, forget Hakuho for a minute. If that's how easily, you know, this group of, you know, 75-year-olds thinks that you can discard something that has historically been an honor reserved for only the greatest of the greatest, then what value did the honor have when it was offered to Kita Noumi, Taiho, Chiyono Fuji, Takanohana? Obviously, it's a slap in the face to Hakuho by a committee of possibly xenophobic old people who maybe never liked him anyway, and will look for any excuse they can find to be incensed by him. Look, I could probably do 1,500 words about this in a piece on the site, and maybe I will, but I think, you know, if you look at this in the context of his career and the legacy that he can leave, sure, he can become Magaki Oyakata, it's what he has now, or more likely, you know, take over the Miyagino stable ownership and take over that name and still, you know, continue to do the great work that he's doing in recruiting and developing young rikishi and become a great stable master. But I think that, you know, you look at history, obviously in sumo, nothing is left to be the choice of the rikishi, but you would have thought, you know, like Chiyono Fuji before him, like Takanohana, that would have been his choice to determine what name he continued on with.
All right, so Andy, he's probably going to continue the Hakuho Cup, right? So it's going to be impossible to erase his name from sumo any day soon. What do you think's going on here?
I think that he may have been... Josh had alluded to the fact that he had already gotten the kabu, I'm thinking that he was tipped off to either what the decision was going to be, or he may have been going the Chiyono Fuji route and possibly refusing it. And I mean, there is a reasoning behind that, because Chiyono Fuji would not have been able to pass down the Chiyono Fuji name to anybody. And so he preferred to be Kokonoe Oyakata. And I'm not sure how much the Takanohana drama played into a lot of this.
Good point.
Because, this committee was actually set up in the aftermath of the Haruma Fuji incident. And so they would have had the Takanohana. His ego had kind of gotten bigger than the Kyokai, and he wanted to really force it to do his will in that particular scandal.
Yep.
And I can imagine that committee would not have wanted Hakuho to have that large of a head. And so
Too late.
I guess. Yeah, and this would, by being able to kind of deny him it, they might be able to kind of deflate his ego a little bit. But he could probably just say this is more traditional, more in line with Japanese traditions like kabuki, where people take on a role or even in industry, where people, hand their businesses or their kabuki roles down into the family, and so they keep it. A generational thing, whereas the Ichidai Toshiyori, it really is something that's kind of, it doesn't even allow that. And in a country where you've got like Mitsubishi proudly tracing like its roots back to Sakamoto Ryoma, or you've got like sake makers who are like, yeah, I'm a fifth generation or I'm seventh generation scallop farmer. I guess tradition is a very, very important thing. And so I'm going to assume or hope that maybe Hakuho would have preferred the Miyagi no name, and that might be the way that he's going about it. I just think that the last time somebody was offered that, their head got bigger than Aurora, and the committee was not wanting that to happen again.
This is the timing kind of is just, I
yeah,
think that's the thing that's
bad,
difficult.
Didn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I think to your point, Andy, you look at that Miyagi no stable, which has been more or less established in various guises for much of the last century. You know, there is a history there, and they have had Yokozuna before, and it can become an even more prestigious name under his leadership. And, as people like John Gunning like to point out, it's never stopped these Daiyokozuna from creating the dojo in their own name. So, he could build some new building like Oshiogawa is now and call it the Hakuho Dojo at Miyagi no Beya. And, that could still be something great that he leaves as a legacy.
Well, so it would be a... It would not be a fitting way to conclude this segment without touching upon a subject that we devoted an entire 20-minute segment to just a week ago, which is, at that point, it was the injury of Hibiki Kiryu, and now, sadly, this fellow has passed away after a really terrible accident during Day 13 Sandanmei competition that was compounded by negligent medical care. There's no other way to put it. I know this was a hot topic for everyone in the sumo world and especially on the blog. Andy, just a couple thoughts on this one, if you could close us out.
I mean, we've seen it picked up in mainstream Western media in the past couple of days. I've seen even the BBC, ABC covering it. We saw news today, and thank you to Haruth for passing that on, that it does seem like they're not going to ignore the issue, and they're going to offer a bit of a preparedness course that has apparently been in the works since the Shonanomi incident.
Yeah.
And I don't know if y'all are if you can remember, because I had to look it up. I mean, there have just been so many of these lately. I mean, just last tournament, you had Hibikiryu, you had a Shinpan go down, you had a Gyoji go down, and the Shonanomi incident was like the Hokuto Fuji incident that you guys mentioned earlier, where it was a mata and he couldn't get up. There was one point where he looked right at a Shinpan, like, what are we going to do here? And when you've got a sport where, I guess, so much of the machinations and, particularly the Gyoji are the ones that are standing around looking around, because their role is so scripted. Everything is the way that they hold the gumbai and their steps. Everything is so every movement is rehearsed. It just makes the indecision around these injuries just that much more striking. because they don't have a plan. And it seems like finally they're going to try to have a plan. There's a lot of cynicism around that there will never be any change. But the thing is, I do hold out hope that there will be. This sport did implement things like video replay before any other sports. Yep. There have been other changes that have been slow to be implemented, but sometimes sudden changes, like when we had the, oh, you got to get both hands down. I mean, that seemed to come around pretty quickly. And so, I mean, with injuries, hopefully tradition will play a bit of a backseat and we'll get some, or at least it won't be used in it as an excuse. And hopefully they'll be pretty diligent in the future about at least having a plan and being able to execute it.
Josh, any thoughts to close out the show on this tragic subject?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously the situation with Hebe Kuryu is heartbreaking. You know, to see it happen in a sport that we love, for a person who is doing any sport, you know, to lose their life as a result of taking part in that. And it, you know, there's a lot of sadness. There's a lot of anger about that. I think, you know, the one thing that I try to, and obviously, you know, I had some strong words a minute ago about a different subject, you know, but, you know, I've always believed it's important, especially for those of us who come into the sport from the outside as fans and from different cultures ourselves, to have some, you know, sort of understanding of where we are relative to that culture, and to not be in a position where, you know, we think we know better, or, you know, right, we want to tell them how we think it should be done. But, you know, no one should be losing their life because, you know, in the first few minutes following an injury, there's no plan. And I think that, you know, the news that Andy's relayed is really, you know, a positive step.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, it's a positive step, but, you know, it needs to be taken seriously because, you know, as I said last time, we've seen it time and time again. These videos of these injuries are not going to go away. The fact that you could easily pull up that Shona Naomi incident, you know, is something that the Kyokai needs to be thinking about, yeah, because, you know, there's just going to be a library of these moments. You know, it's an opportunity right now to learn from this and to put something right. And hopefully whatever they put into place can really inform the thinking of this sort of new generation of Oyakata who are coming through, and the people who, you know, because people have to understand, these are the people that staff these events,
yes,
as Shinpan, as the leadership of the organization. So, you know, if they can start to move things in the right direction, then hopefully that'll mean better safety for the people who are taking part.
Yeah, and just the numbers, there are hundreds of bouts every day.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so there's going to be bouts every day where somebody has an injury that's, a broken leg or a concussion or something. So it will be good to see some sort of a plan.
It will. And on that hopeful note, we're going to conclude this segment. Thank you all for sticking with us. We'll have another segment coming up soon where we talk about Rikishi and our always regrettable prediction. Until then, I'm Bruce. That's Andy. That's Josh. We're Tachi Ai, and thank you.